Changing world. Off Hollywood Media presents a voice of truth and inspiration, resonating a vibration of love and understanding, illuminating new paths for new directions as we, as one, strive for higher and higher levels of consciousness, always remembering life changes. And now, your host, our MC, our master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. I am so excited about this evening's show. I like this show so much. Can I say that about our own show? Of course I can. I like it because of all the fascinating guests that we have on, and I like it because of the things that we talk about and the way we talk about them. So, for example, our guest today is Victoria Moran. She's the author of 10 books, including the classic bestseller Creating a Charmed Life, and weight loss books such as Fit From Within and The Love Powered Diet. Victoria was once 60 pounds heavier than she is today, and she has been free from, quote, eating for a fix, unquote, for an astounding 25 years. She's an inspirational speaker, a certified life coach, and a two-time Oprah guest. So I can't wait to bring Victoria on in just a few minutes. But before we do, you know, one of the things I love about the show, again, is how we talk about certain things. And I think I'm perfect for this show, if I can say so myself, in the sense that I'm a believer, mostly, in a lot of things. How do I say it? I think you know what I'm trying to say. I believe so much of this stuff, and yet I don't always do it. Or some of the stuff I don't believe, but sometimes I do it. Or some of the stuff is just unbelievable, but I just suspend my disbelief. So I know a lot of us are there, and a lot of us don't really have time to explore different ways of being, and we kind of just go around day to day saying, is this the way to do it? Should I do this? What's this? What's that? So the good news is glad that we're here doing it, and hopefully deciphering some things for you. So here's one of those things. Okay, we've got lots of friends, obviously, in the field. I've got lots of friends in many fields. And one of my friends said to me, Filippo, you know, you should call in the spirits and the energies every time you start something. Call in the spirits and the energies, positive energy and ancestors and all that. And we were about to do something, and they said, do you mind if we do that now? And he did this sort of thing, which was kind of cool and felt kind of cool. And that was great. But when it comes to me doing it, I don't, or haven't. And so this friend of mine said, Filippo, are you doing this? And I said, yeah, you know, no, I don't do it. You know, you should do it every morning, or you should do it before the radio show, or you should do it before a meeting. Or like, yeah, you know, it's cool. But so that happened a couple weeks ago, that conversation. And I never did anything about it. So a friend of mine says to me recently, Filippo, aren't you using Bluetooth on your iPhone? And I said, no, I don't like the electromagnetic energies that are converging around my iPhone being that close to me. And he says, but Filippo, the electromagnetic energies are everywhere. And I said, yeah, but they're not good for us. He said, but they're everywhere already. So the fact that they're not, you know, converging on your iPhone doesn't really make a difference. And I said, you know, they're everywhere, but they're dispersed. And as soon as you turn on the Bluetooth on your iPhone, then they all converge, or a lot of them, on your iPhone. And so wherever you're holding your iPhone, there those energies go. So that conversation happened earlier in the week, last week. And then I had another conversation with a friend of mine whose mother was passing. And she was with her mother in the hospital, and she would spend the evenings with her until she got spooked out. And she told me that her mother was talking to beings as if they were there, but she couldn't see them. And she said, but it was real. And and her mother was talking to her deceased husband, my friend's father, aunts and uncles that she hadn't heard of in a long time, that had been deceased for a long time. And she was saying how it's good to see you. I haven't seen you in a long time. And she said, I know she was seeing something because I felt it. It was so freaky that I couldn't sleep there anymore because I knew they were there. And I thought, that's kind of interesting. Maybe they're always there. But at the moment where my friend's mother was getting ready to pass, maybe they were converging around my friend's mother. And so I thought, that's interesting. So I got to thinking about this. If the electromagnetic energy is everywhere and it's not good for you and your body, and yes, it's bombarding me, but as soon as I turn on the Bluetooth on my iPhone, they converge on my iPhone, and if it's near me, then I'm attracting all that negative energy or electromagnetic energy to myself. What about on the positive side? If the spirits and the angels and the ancestors and these beings are always all there, and then at the moment when somebody is passing and they need guidance or they need help or they're calling their family, these energies all converge. So let's call that like the positive energy around this person who's passing. Well, what if, taking the analogy of the iPhone, I can purposely call in the energies of the ancestors and the positive spirits or positive energy or whatever it is, and maybe there's something to what this friend of mine was trying to say by saying, Filippo, every time you do something of significance, a meeting or you start your day, or you call in these energies. So kind of like I was arguing with my friend saying, I don't want to turn on the Bluetooth on my iPhone because I don't want the energies to converge there. But my friend was saying, but they're all around. I said, yeah, but they're not converging. They're not focusing. They're not concentrating. Well, I know positive energy is all around, and I do believe in spirits, and I do believe the ancestors must be around because I had similar experiences like this friend of mine did this week with her mother passing. So why am I not calling in the energies, and isn't it a good idea? And so I kind of had to look at my own words and say, I can learn from myself. I can learn from this show. And frankly, I haven't really been doing it because I remembered I was going to talk about it on the show. And now I'm talking about it. So I'm going to do it. And here we are. So we've called in the energies and here they are. All the positive energies and all the ancestors that want to be here to be part of this wonderful show, bringing you in and loving you and thanking you for being here. How's that? I hope I've done my friends proud and my ancestors proud and that they're all here and we're all going to have a good time together. And we're all going to have a good time together no matter what, because this is Life Changes. And I am Filippo Voltaggio, and we always have a good time. At least I do. And I know all of us here at the team do too. And every time we have a guest in the studio, we enjoy them. And today our guest is not in the studio, but we're going to enjoy her nonetheless. Again, you can reach us at www.lifechanges.ws. And our guest today is Victoria Moran, who I said earlier is the author of 10 books, including the classic bestseller, Creating a Charmed Life, and weight loss books such as Fit from Within and The Love Powered Diet. Now, I read this last week on our show, getting prepared for tonight's show, letting everybody know that I thought this was so great and adorable in so many ways that Victoria has been writing since she was a teenager. For example, she wanted to meet the Beatles, so she got a $1 press card from a teen magazine, and it worked. It got her her first Beatles press conference. And then at 14, at 15, her second Beatles press conference. And when she was 17, Paul McCartney bought her a drink. Now, I think that's amazing, but as she described it, that's when I knew that even though I was just an ordinary girl from Kansas City with a recurrent weight problem and bad skin, I really did live a charmed life. So let's bring on, and we're happy to have Victoria Moran on the show. Hi, Victoria.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening. You know, so this story happened at 14, 15, and 17. How did that set the tone for the rest of your life?
It taught me that what the world was telling me was a great life or a charmed life or what it took to really be cool wasn't that. What I was told out there in Kansas City in high school was that I was supposed to be cute and perky and a cheerleader. But the cheerleaders, you know, weren't getting feted by Paul McCartney. And what it taught me was I may have to go through certain things in my life. There are certain things that I don't know about and that I have to kind of stumble through and learn. And for me, some of those things were, you know, coming out into the world and knowing how to be attractive and this and that. That was part of the learning curve. But if I kept my sights on what I really wanted and saw no reason why I shouldn't get it, it would come. And that's true when you're 14 and when you're 40.
Well, you obviously have done a great job at this, and I know you've been on Oprah twice, and you've helped a lot of people through your life coaching, and you're saying that you only have one talent, and that talent is what exactly?
Is words. I'm good at words, spoken and written, and so I didn't have a lot of confusion about what I was supposed to do with my life. And people who are more gifted have more confusion. You know, it's the idea of to whom much is given, much is required. So some people really do have to juggle and figure out what is their life's work, what's their passion, what's their calling, or maybe what's their passion and calling for right now, and maybe 10 years from now it'll be something different. For me, it's very clear that it's words. This is how I reach people. This is how I speak to people. And it's also the way that I'm reached and the way I'm spoken to. You know, they say there are three kinds of learners, visual, kinesthetic. My daughter's like that. When she was learning Chinese, she and her teacher would walk around the classroom there at the language school and then do little parades and things because my daughter learned best when she was in motion. But I'm auditory. I love to listen. When somebody, I ask for directions and they say, oh, here, let me draw you a map. I say, no, please don't. Just tell me how to get there. And once you know how you best relate to the world, how you best receive information, it'll give you some good information about yourself.
Well, you know, Victoria, actually, there's so much I'd like to talk to you about, and obviously your books. But before we get into some of those, since you just said something that is very near and dear to me, I remember being a child and loving to play the violin and loving to sing and loving all kinds of things, actually, and being somewhat given praise for some of this. I remember that one particular child in the school was really excelling on the violin, and my parents would say, look at him. And I'd say, well, yeah, but that's the only thing he knows how to do. I've looked at that and thought maybe it was a cop-out. But then I heard you say something, and I wanted to explore that a little bit with you. You know, have you helped people like that in the past?
You mean people that have a lot of gifts and they don't know which one to use first?
Yeah, I'm not going to be so egocentric and say that they're gifts, but I'm sure they are, actually, and talents and all that. I'm just looking at, let's say, interests. I'm more comfortable with that.
Yeah, you know, there is a wonderful woman named Barbara Sher, S-H-E-R. She's famous for her first book that she wrote back in the 80s, which was called Wishcraft. And she wrote another book in 2006 that is for people that you are talking about, and I need to look her up right here real quick so I can give you that title. Because anybody's listening who is dealing with that, it's, oh, here's her book, Refuse to Choose. The subtitle is Use All Your Interests, Passions, and Hobbies to Create the Life and Career of Your Dreams. Refuse to Choose by Barbara Sher, S-H-E-R. And her point is that if you are one of these multi-talented, multi-gifted, multi-interest kind of people, maybe you're not going to use each one of those interests as your income-earning profession, but that doesn't mean that you can't bring them all into your life. And sometimes it's not the thing that makes your money that is the most important thing. Back in Kansas City years ago, I knew a man named Floyd, and Floyd kind of lived a double life, but only his good friends knew that. People that didn't know him very well knew that he was a janitor at Hallmark Cards. Very smart guy, and people were always saying, Floyd, go back to school. Get a degree. Get a profession. There's no reason that you should be pushing that broom. But what they didn't know was that in his other life, Floyd was a connoisseur of film. Now, this was a long time ago. This was even before video. This was when if you wanted to explore independent films, you had to get films on big reels, you know, like in the olden days. And he did this, and he had access to wonderful, wonderful films. He had parties where people could go over, and it was almost like he had his own little movie theater. He had a life outside of work that was far more stimulating and interesting than anything that he could have done from 9 to 5, whether he'd gone back to school or not. And in fact, just pushing the broom was a great job for him because he never had to worry about it. It wasn't the kind of job where he had to think about patients or clients or bring work home. He went, he made enough money to live on, and then he had his real life. So there's always a way. When you really want to have a fabulous life, you just figure it out.
Well, good for Floyd, and thank you for sharing that with us. Now let's get to things that are more near and dear to your heart. Fit from Within and the Love Power Diet. You were 60 pounds heavier than you are today, and you've kept your weight off for 25 years, and you're cured of the eating for a fix. I'm assuming that's like emotional eating, right?
Yeah, and you know, I'm an addict. I am a food addict, and so with addiction, we usually don't say cured. We just say recovered. And what this means is that there is something in my character that I have an empty hole inside. Well, you know, most of us do. Maybe all of us do. My theory is that we're born with an empty hole, kind of right about the solar plexus. You know, when you get scared or something is kind of intimidating and you kind of feel something going on about the stomach, that's the empty hole, and I believe that it's planted there so that we'll search for meaning, so that we'll fill it with meaning. Blaise Pascal said there's a God-shaped hole in every man that only God can fill, and I would agree with that. If you don't like the word God, you use another one, but you get the idea. So for me, I started at a very early age filling that emptiness with extra food. And what I found was that to stop doing that, I needed to have a spiritual awakening. I needed to have what Carl Jung called a complete emotional displacement and rearrangement. And by the grace of God, that happened for me. And if my spiritual life just, you know, went to hell, I mean, if it just really got awful, I would not start drinking. I wouldn't go out and pick up sailors. I'd go back to the food because that's my nature. And so that's why I don't use the word cured. I look cured. to anybody who's looking from the outside. I mean, I'm thin, I'm fit, I eat whatever I want and enjoy it. But I've been given the gift that I call healing at the desire level, so that what I want and what I need are the same things. And it is a great gift, because people talk about, you know, overeating like it's not that big a deal, like, oh my gosh, did you know that person was a heroin addict? Oh, that's so dramatic. Well, it is dramatic, but so is driving under the influence of pizza. I mean, it can really be a terrible thing to have to eat, to not be able to stop, to lie about it, to hide it, and yet there's a way out by finding this spiritual solution.
Wow. There's so much in your book, The Love Power Diet, that is fascinating. But I have to tell you, you got a laugh out loud from me when I read your food facts for Point Zero. Eating everything on your plate will not help a single starving child.
Yeah, we're given a lot of weird information about food when we're kids. And we're given a lot of weird information when we're grown up, simply because so much of the information comes from vested interests. Mm-hmm. That's why they always tell you, for example, if you want to get investment advice, go to somebody who charges by the hour. Don't go to somebody who works for a mutual fund company, because he's going to want to sell you his mutual funds. Well, of course, that makes sense. So much of the information that we get about food and nutrition either comes from a company that's producing food, or it comes from an organization in support of a certain industry. So you need to get your information from an unbiased source and start eating food that grows up out of the ground. Eat food that's beautiful. Eat food that's lots of different, wonderful colors. And I don't mean, you know, Twizzlers. I mean foods that are naturally all different colors, to get that rainbow of phytonutrients. It's just wonderful, some of the information that we have now that was not known at all when I was growing up. My dad was a doctor. In fact, he was a diet doctor, which was really rough being a fat kid. But I would go into his private office and pull down these wonderful old books that he'd used in medical school, thinking that if I learned enough, maybe I could cure myself. Well, you know, that's a sure sign of an addict, thinking maybe if I know enough about my substance of choice, the substance will take care of me. But I do remember sitting in that office, and one day I was reading about nutrient-dense foods, and they had foods listed from the most nutrients per calorie to the least. And the foods at the top of the list were things like kale, collard greens, turnip greens, Swiss chard. I'd never heard of this stuff. And I remember thinking, okay, here I am in a, you know, upper middle class family, should be able to have access to, you know, good stuff, not yachts, but certainly collard greens, whatever they are. But it just never came up. These weren't the kinds of foods that a lot of people were eating then. But now, I don't think a day goes by that I don't hear from some wonderful, attractive, sophisticated person that I know about how much she loves kale. Oh, my gosh, I juice kale. Oh, I put kale in my smoothies. Oh, I saute kale. Do you know if you chop it up really fine and massage it with a little olive oil and salt and vinegar, that it just softens up and you can make a kale salad and it's just as if you'd steamed it? And I'm thinking, boy, we have come a long way. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful that we are invited now to take such good care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. You know, I like so much how you're talking about this, Victoria. And it's interesting that because of you being on our show and your book being in my possession and me reading through it, I've had conversations throughout the week. And it's interesting that it came up that there used to be a man who most people that looked at him would say he's definitely obese. Most people that look at me would not say that I'm obese. Now, my friends in Hollywood that are models or what would definitely argue that point. But they, you know, I have a few extra pounds that I would like, and I'm more uncomfortable with that than most people are. But this particular person that was really obese would despise me because of how quote unquote thin I was in his mind, and how I could never understand him. And we're both performers. We were both singing on the stage at one point, and it became a real issue of how much despise he had for me. And it's interesting because I told him or somebody, his wife or somebody, that he has no idea how much I struggle with my weight, that I might actually be struggling more with it than he is.
Mm-hmm.
Because of, it's all in our head, right?
Exactly. And that's why it would be wonderful if when dealing with this particular issue, we could all have bags on our heads. Because somebody can come in sometimes to a professional setting, to a doctor or a psychologist, and say, this food is killing me. And the professional looks at the person, and they look quite slender and nice. And unless they're admitting to being bulimic and overeating and vomiting so they don't gain weight, the professional person says, what's the problem? You know, you look great. And conversely, sometimes people can be obese, certainly in our culture, and they're not compulsive overeaters. They're not eating for a fix the way I ate for a fix. It's very easy to be heavy in this country. We have very concentrated food. When you think about typical American food, it's rich, it's heavy, it's got a lot of oil, a lot of fat. It's not water content food. You don't think of salads and steamed vegetables as being really big in the typical American diet. We've also created the kind of society and culture where you really don't have to move. You can have a very nice life and barely get up. This is the first time in the history of humanity that that's ever been the case. So it's very easy to have a little weight to lose or a lot of weight to lose and not have the emotional component. But there are some questions that you can ask yourself if you think that you might have the emotional part. Would you have any interest in hearing some of these?
Sure.
Okay, well, these come from Overeaters Anonymous, which I just highly recommend. It doesn't cost anything. They don't weigh you. They don't have a diet. This is all about what's going on the inside of what's your situation. So one of the questions is, have you ever dieted to lose weight? Now, that seems like such a silly question because certainly a lot of women, it's like, are you kidding? It's my hobby. But why is it your hobby? It's a very strange hobby. And another thing that I ask people sometimes is, have you dieted to lose weight more than 3 times in your life? You know that law enforcement thing where, you know, first time we'll let you off, second time we'll be lenient, third time we're sending you up the river. What's the same kind of thing? If you have dieted 3 times, whether you have lost all the weight you wanted to lose and then gained it back, or whether you just couldn't even get to that point, that's interesting. That tells me that maybe there's something going on that doesn't have anything to do with food. A great question that OA asks people is, do you eat when you're not hungry? And the reason this is such a splendid question is that most people out there believe that this has something to do with hunger. This is why they do gastric bypass surgery. The idea is, if you feel full, you won't want to keep eating. And they've been advertising something, at least in my area on TV lately, it's called a full bar that's supposed to make you feel full and then you won't want to eat. And this is ludicrous to me because for a compulsive overeater, feeling full is just an inconvenience. You just push through that. And so if you know, get indigestion, it's just the price to pay to, you know, keep
we're strong,
on
we're persistent.
And another question, and I'll stop here. There are 15 of these questions on the Overeaters Anonymous, overeatersanonymous.org website, if anybody is interested in going there and seeing the rest of them. It's called 15 Questions. But one that I really like is, do you eat sensibly before others and make up for it alone? This is the thing. If you're if you have some weight to lose, but, you know, you just go out and you have dessert with your friends when you feel like it, and you go to the barbecue and you just have a slab of this and that and you don't care who sees it, that's a very different process than somebody who is just eating like out of, you know, better homes and bodies in front of people, and then they get home and binge all night. So you have to know which category you're in to know how to address the situation.
You know, Victoria, that's fascinating, and it reminds me, had a dinner party, I was at a dinner party, and one of my friends doesn't drink, so everybody else had something to drink at the table, and this friend of mine did not have any because he doesn't drink, and then after I found out that weekend he got drunk. And this is so true about the eating part, too, the eating sensibly in front of other people, but then going home and binging, like you said. How interesting in that. And I remember making that comment that why didn't he just have a drink with us, or two or three even if he had to? But, you know, maybe if he brought it out into the light, it wouldn't be such an issue.
Well, this is where these things get so fascinating and interesting. And I think if you're dealing with somebody who hasn't crossed over the line into addiction, you're absolutely right. Whether it's food, alcohol, sexual, acting out, whatever it is, if somebody is just kind of feeling their way and maybe they've done a little excessive whatever in one of these areas, but they're not addicted, I think of it as a rubber band. You can stretch a rubber band and stretch a rubber band and use it again and use it again. But one of these days, you're going to stretch it too far, and it will break. That's what happens with the willpower in overeating. And people will say, oh, I feel so bad about myself. It's like I don't have any willpower. No, it's not like you don't. And it's not your fault. The rubber band broke. You need something besides that willpower because it's severed. You're never going to get it back. So with your friend and in your story, if he's an alcoholic, if he was not drinking with you because he knew that one day at a time he needed to not drink, then for that day he was doing the absolute right thing, and then whatever happened 2 days later, he fell off the wagon.
Right.
And so it's a funny thing, and all these diseases are self-diagnosed. You know, I can't look at another person and say, you're an alcoholic, you're a compulsive overeater, because I don't know. But each person knows. Is this something that you would do anything to stop if you could, but you can't? And in that case, you just need some extra help, and it seems so awful. It's like, oh my God, what if I can't help myself? Good! Because then you open yourself up to get help from a higher power, however you conceive of that, and then you clean your life up, and then you go out into the world with so much joy. You'll hear sometimes people in 12-step recovery saying, I'm a grateful drug addict. I'm a grateful overeater. And it's like, are you nuts? But now I get it. It's almost like it's a gift. I heard somebody once, he was actually a Unity minister, and you know how Unity is religious, spiritual institution, and they're very much into positive thinking and never saying anything negative. Well, this minister happened to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, where it's customary to say, my name's Joe, I'm an alcoholic, just so that, you know, the new guys will feel like, oh, wow, I've come to the right place.
Yeah, which, and I don't care for that, by the way.
I know, a lot of people don't. And somebody asked him once, this wonderful, I'll use his name because he's passed away now, Reverend Bolin, and they said, how can you do that? Everything you know about speaking positively, and you go to those meetings and you say, I'm an alcoholic. He said, that's not a negative statement for me, because that's what brought me to God.
Interesting.
So, you know, it's all in how you frame it.
Interesting.
And just to have this gratitude thing going on, you know, thank you, God, whatever it was got me here, and it's all good.
Right. Well, and I actually kind of agree with that. Thank you, God, that it got me here. But continuing to reinforce I'm an alcoholic or I'm an addict, I have a problem with. And maybe that's what made this friend of mine's rubber band break. But there's good things that comes out of all kinds of things. And you have different kind of help available. And that's what I'd like to talk about in the time remaining. And I want to remind everybody that we're talking to Victoria Moran on Life Changes. And this is Filippo Voltaggio. And you can learn more about us at www.lifechanges.ws. And Victoria, do you like to give the victoriamoran.com website?
I love to give the victoriamoran.com website. Thank you.
Okay. And Moran is spelled M-O-R-A-N.
Yes.
And there you'll find so much about her, but you'll also find her books and how to get to her and get them. So here we've talked about some problems, and you're known for the weight loss books, of course, but you're also known for creating a charmed life, and now your book, Living a Charmed Life. So
yes.
How do we create it? How do we live it?
Well, first,
can you help us?
First, you have the audacity to believe that anybody can have one, you know, that it is possible on Earth for a person to live remarkably, and then stretch even further to believe that not just a person, but you can have this kind of life, and that, in fact, you're supposed to. So what does it mean, charmed life? Does it mean you never have any problems? Of course not, unless you're living on some planet that isn't this one. What it means is that everything
And some
that
people
comes,
are, by the way.
Yeah, that everything that comes at you, you can deal with. You know, we have these phrases like, it just came from out of left field. Well, a really good pitcher can a really good catcher can catch it.
Mm.
So that's what you want to do. When something comes from left field, you ride with it. It's sort of like a whitewater rafting. People wouldn't go if it weren't for those scary waves. And I happen to believe in a spiritual sense that we wouldn't come to this earth if we weren't looking for a wild ride. We could have stayed over, you know, playing harps or whatever we were doing before we got here. So we came here for this grand adventure. In the ancient Vedas of India, they say that even the angels envy the human body because there are things that can be done in this state of having this body that you just can't do anywhere else in the universe. And that's stuff like walking along the beach, holding hands with somebody you absolutely adore, like eating watermelon and walleye and having it drip down your chin. There are just some wonderful, wonderful experiences and sensations that we can have here, but this is a plane of duality. And that means that we're also going to have some of these struggles and some of these challenges. But if you meet them with the attitude of, I'm bigger than you are, let's do this dance, then you get through them with this lovely grace, and you start to mature into one of these people that other people admire, people like being in your presence, because you have a strength about you. You have a stability that's very, very appealing to other people.
I'm liking it.
Me too. I like living it.
Okay, so it's just a mindset, or is that where we start?
Well, it's largely a mindset, and then you do the stuff. You have to take action. You know, this idea of, you know, everything is wonderful, that is great, and we do need to go within. It is so essential to go within every day. In fact, if there's only one thing that you can do for yourself, if you're not going to eat healthy food and you're not going to exercise and you're not going to tell the truth, the one thing you can do is quiet time every day. Meditation is so valuable. Even if it's 5 minutes, if that's all you can commit to start with, that for 5 minutes you will sit and do nothing. You will just sit and breathe. And sometimes you might think, oh my God, I'll die. I can't sit here for 5 minutes. And then when you don't die and you do it again the next day and it starts to be a habit, everything changes. So this is very powerful stuff. But what you take from there is what you go out into the world with. This is taking action. You have to follow up with action. There's that old saying that you can act yourself into thinking differently more easily than you can think yourself into acting differently. So you want to go out and take action. A great action that anybody can take is to make your bed in the morning. And so many people say, why should I make my bed? I live alone. I go to work all day. But you know all day that the bed is made, and it makes you feel better about yourself. How about if you're in a hurry in the morning, you can't really have a whole breakfast, you're just going to pour some OJ into a glass, how much longer does it take to use a stemmed goblet than a plastic superhero's cup from the Taco Bell? No more time, but how that's going to make you feel as you're dashing out into your day, huge difference. So, yes, you want to have the mindset, but then you want to take these actions. And, you know, if you take the actions first, you're going to develop the mindset so you can really do it either way.
Interesting. I hope you heard the beginning of the show. We were having some technical difficulties, and we had some people writing in saying that they weren't hearing us. So I think we got it fixed. And I was saying how I believe, and yet I don't do, or sometimes I do, but I don't believe. And so you're talking about meditation, and I believe. But I don't necessarily do it as much as I know I should. Now, you're not coming from a spiritual practice. You're saying this is like breathing. I mean, this is a little bit more important than making our bed, maybe.
Yeah. Well, meditation will take care of just about anything. I've been rereading and studying the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. You know, everybody's taking yoga these days. Everybody's doing some kind of yoga because it's so great for the body and all that. But very few people really study yoga philosophy and what that's about. And what that's about is life transformation. And when Patanjali talks about if you have anger, meditate. If you have fear, meditate. Whatever it is that's going on that's causing you problems in your life, meditate. It may not be the only solution, but it will get you to the solution. And it's so good for your health. I mean, my favorite meditation stat health-wise is that people who have meditated regularly for 5 years or more are 12 years younger physiologically than people who don't meditate. So that's worth doing it.
Okay, so how long are you telling us that we need to meditate? Could it be a couple minutes?
I would say that ultimately the minimum it needs to be 10. 10 scares some people, and so if you can just commit to 5, but commit to doing 5 every day, and then you're going to start liking it, and then 10 won't seem so scary. Now, these studies that they've done medically to show how people that meditate live longer, fewer sick days, better immunity, lower cholesterol, all that stuff, almost all of those have been done on people who practice transcendental meditation, which means that they meditate 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the late afternoon. So I can't promise that if you just do 5 minutes in the morning that you're going to be 12 years younger. But I can promise that your life will be better than if you didn't do it. And if you do 10 minutes, it'll be twice as good.
Not only better, but charmed, according to you.
Well, it's a great start because the idea is, you know, that there is a core within us. There is this spark within each one of us. And you know as a performer what that is. You get up there on stage and you're no longer just the person that got the ticket and, you know, skinned your knee today. You're this conduit for this amazing gift. And everybody's got that. We're all here. It's almost sometimes I'll look at people in a big auditorium or something, and I'll just see them as this wonderful kind of glowing light being with this body to carry it around. You know, we judge a lot by the body because we're in such a visual culture. But we are really this amazing, wonderful spirit, by whatever name you want to call it. And whenever you're quiet, when you have your meditation, that's when you can tune into that. If you're a religious person, this is also when you tune into God, when you tune into a higher power. But even if you just see it, that you're tuning into your true self, your self that's powerful, your self that knows what it came here for and can help you know what you came here for, it is so worth being potentially bored for a few minutes every day.
Potentially bored. Well, I would have to say, if you're potentially bored, you're not doing it right.
Well, you know, sometimes, though, it is boring, you know, because we live in a highly stimulating society. And just think about it. Even 5 years ago, it was unusual to go into a restaurant that wasn't a sports bar that had a TV blaring. Now it just seems like there are TVs everywhere. There are TVs when you're waiting to board the plane. There's got the iPhone you were talking about earlier. We're playing the games. We're talking to somebody. There's just never any time to just be still. So when you start a meditation practice, that's no TV, that's no radio, that's no computer, that's not talking to anybody. Oh, my God. So, yeah, it can be boring. But in Asia, they say that boredom is the highest state of receptivity. And the Zen masters will ask the question, what is the most valuable part of a priceless antique porcelain bowl? Well, it's the emptiness, because that's where you put the rice or the potatoes or the oranges. So this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to bring a little emptiness into our lives so that it can be filled with that peace that passes understanding.
Which goes back to the hole that we have that you talked about at the beginning of the show.
Aha!
How we fill it with food, and how instead you are giving us the answer of filling it with some meditation. You know, I think it's interesting that you're creating a Charmed Life book is quoted on those little celestial seasonings tea boxes.
I think that's a hoot. I just feel so grateful. I live in New York City, and they have these little kind of kiosky things out on the street where you can buy kind of cheap pastries and coffee in the morning, one of the few bargains in New York City. And they have these celestial seasonings tea boxes there in their little carts, and sometimes they'll have the Victorian Earl Grey turned around so that my quote is facing outward. And it seems that it's always the day when I'm feeling like I need a little bit of a boost, I get to see my quote on the tea box and think, you live a charmed life. You have nothing to complain about.
Well, it sounds like you do. And if anybody wants to see the quotes directly from the books, they can go to victoriamoran.com and check out Fit From Within or The Love Power Diet or Creating a Charmed Life or Living a Charmed Life or any of the other of the 10 books. Victoria, I think I've been very receptive and I haven't been bored, so I hope I've taken in what you've gotten, and thank you for sharing your information with us and being on our show today.
You're absolutely charming. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, likewise, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay, good night.
Good night. That was so much fun, Victoria, and she's adorable. You got to go to the website at www.lifechanges.ws and see her picture. And she is so thin, and she's been able to keep it off the weight off. So I look forward to taking some of this in and trying it for myself. In the meantime, we've got Dorothy Lee with the State of the Universe address, and I'm looking forward to what that has to share with us.
Well, it's interesting because what I'm sharing with you tonight might just prove Victoria wrong on one of her points. I remember my mom and dad saying that I needed to eat everything on my plate because there were starving children in China. So listen to what I have to say. Ever since the earthquake in Haiti on January the 8th, not only have people all over the world been donating money to provide food, shelter, and medical care, light workers from all over the world have been sending love, light, and healing energies to the ones who have been affected in this disaster. We've been assisting those who have died in reaching the light instead of staying stuck in the middle of the chaos. I have received hundreds of emails from all over the globe from other light workers who have shared ways we can be of service. one of the most interesting thoughts of how we can help is what I want to share with you now. This came to me from Nancy Tate from treeofthegoldenlight.com and was contributed by Raphael from iamblessingwater.com. He tells us that one of the ways that Native Americans go about finding their truth is to do a vision quest. And the vision quest goes about having the questors going up on top of a mountain with no water and no food from anywhere from 1 to 4 days. And there, amongst other things, they will pray to Creator for guidance. They have helpers, and some of these helpers would just assist them in a very different way. They would help them any way they could, but they couldn't make physical or eye contact with the person who was on the quest. But the ways they could help them included prayers, drinking water, and eating. Yes, the ones that were helping were drinking and eating for the person who was undergoing the quest, because that person wasn't allowed to eat or drink for 4 days. So the helpers were instructed to eat and drink and be very present when eating and drinking, and to eat and drink with the intent of nourishing the vision quester. Think about it. Maybe if we would eat and drink thinking of nourishing the starving people in the world, maybe they would take on the extra calories. I think that would be a great idea if it works. But what happened was when people came down from the mountain, they would say, who was eating those strawberries? They were delicious. They actually felt the nourishment, and they were hydrated. So how could this be? How could it be? Well, we are all one. We are truly all one. And Emoto began to prove that with his messages from water. He showed us how our thoughts could clear dirty lakes and how prayers could do the same. Now, so I ask over the next few days that all of you, when you eat your breakfast, lunch, and dinner, that you center yourself and you ask your guides to send the nourishing energies of the foods you're eating and the liquids you're drinking to the people and animals of Haiti. Be very present when eating and with the intent and the knowledge that this is happening. What a great way to help. So let's send, in addition to those thoughts, prayers filled with unconditional love, hope, and healing energies to all of the inhabitants of Haiti and to all of the volunteers who are spending hours searching through the rubble to find the bodies of the ones who have passed so the ones who are still alive can have closure. Let us send prayers of thanks, love, and light to all of the volunteers, to the medical personnel, to the open hearts who have donated money, and to the media, and to all there who are making a difference. And while we're at it, let us remember that here in America, 1 out of 8 people go to bed hungry. In March of 2009, a study was released showing that 1 in 50 American children are homeless. About 3.5 million Americans, including 1,350,000 children, have been homeless for a significant period of time. And over 254,000 men and women and children are currently homeless in Los Angeles County alone. So let us do what we can for those who are here in America, here in our own cities. Let's open our hearts and our pocketbooks to them and not wait for another disaster like Katrina to happen. I'm so excited to announce that Life Changes is partnering with United Steps, which is a great organization. It is one which is addressing homelessness in Los Angeles, and we will be doing a series of concerts called Sing With Me, Filippo and Friends. United Steps has an awesome program to help the homeless and to help those with homes to realize that the homeless are people just like us. In fact, I know some homeless people that I would have never believed would have found themselves in this situation. And I'm grateful to Mr. Charles Hill, the founder of United Steps, for finding unique solutions to assist the homeless. Our concerts will be employing musicians and singers who are homeless. We will be posting the dates of our concerts on our website, lifechanges.ws. If you wish to donate money or to volunteer your time and or your energies to make these concerts a great success, please email me at loveandmiracles@gmail.com. loveandmiracles@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you and seeing you. Thank you for listening. And until next week, please remember that you are the power in your world. You are the guru you've been waiting for. Choose to become a very conscious co-creator by making truly elegant choices. And never forget that you are powerful beyond measure and that you are love. You are lovable and you are loved.
Thank you, Dorothy, for the State of the Universe address and for reminding me that I am lovable, loved, and what?
Love.
I am love, I am lovable, and I am loved, as we all are. Hopefully we all feel that. And hopefully we all are. You say we all are?
We all are.
We all are, by you at least.
Well, no. God is love, and love is God, and we are all divine children of God, so we have to be love. It's just simple math.
Well, there it is. I am love. Okay. Well, you know, actually, in carrying on a little bit, since living the lives that we have come here to live is so on so many people's mind these days, especially with so many things going on that seem to prevent us from living the kind of life that we feel we should be living, we thought our today's guest, Victoria Moran, was very important for the Living the Charm Life and Creating the Charm Life conversation. And next week, we'll be having a further in-depth conversation about how to ditch the life your mind created and start living the one your soul intended. And it's by author Jaya Lee, and her book is Living Beyond Belief. Jaya is a mystic, a healer, a teacher, and a dreamer, and is devoted to individual and collective spiritual awakening. So let us look forward to living beyond our belief as we look forward to having Jaya Lee on our show next week. And once again, thank Victoria Moran for being on our show this week. And that is our show this week. It always seems to go by so fast, and I'm always entertained and not bored at all. I'm excited to come back next week and do this with you all and have you join us here, along with, our segment host and producer Dorothy Lee and our producer Mark Lejeure. Want to remind you that we can keep the conversation going during the week, and so many of you are, and we're grateful for it. You visit us on our website, and you also come to our Facebook pages, and it's exciting to see you there, and our family is growing, and we're grateful for that. Want to remind you also that today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles. So to learn more about them, visit our sponsor page on our website and click on their links. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and it has been my pleasure being of service by hosting Life Changes today. And again, along with Dorothy Lee and Mark Lejeure and our engineer Seth, we thank you for joining us in being a part of the show and being a part of the change we all wish to see in the world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes. Join us here every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and visit us on the web at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. And follow our community on Facebook at Life Changes with Filippo. Join us here next week as we consciously embrace and explore the only constant, life changes.